Welcome to the Impatient Entrepreneur Podcast, a show where we hear from entrepreneurs and business owners who are chomping at the bit to make their mark on the world. I'm your host, Lauren Quidar Cockrell. Now, let's hurry up and get to the good stuff. Welcome back, friends. Today, we are talking about tech and what it's like to be a woman entrepreneur in technology. This is going to be a fantastic conversation, and I'm so excited to get to introduce you to my new best friend, Brittany Greenfield, founder and CEO of Wobby Inc., a cybersecurity company. Well, Brittany, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Lauren. I'm really excited to be here.
I'm super excited. We had a pre-interview call that we both had to just, you know, take a time out and say, let's save it for the show.
Exactly. We're like, okay, hold on 1 second. Let's bring that energy, maybe brush her hair.
Yes.
And then we can actually do this for the real time.
Exactly. I'm reporting live from an everything shower that happened today. All right. So Brittany, tell us, what does Wobby do? Tell me about this journey, the genesis and everything.
I mean, I don't think we have enough time, so I'll try to keep it as short as possible. So what Wobby does is specialize in an area of application security or cybersecurity called application security, which is how we build software securely. It's a lot like building a house. Mm-hmm. You don't just toss the house up and put people in it and go, don't worry, it's safe and secure. You have a system of checks and balances. And sometimes that means to do the check, you stop, full stop. Right? Because you have to have the inspector in, because if you put in faulty wiring and you don't check before the drywall comes in, it's very expensive and hard to replace. Mm. Other times, you're just creating a punch list, like a crack in the paint that you can fix later. And software is developed exactly the same way. So we handle the security and essentially the safety of that before your data gets moved into it. And, you know, as for how I got here, you know, I got into tech at a time where I first had to explain to my friends that I was working in the cloud and I was not working for the Weather Service. That was challenge number one. And then the second one was what a startup was. I came out of college and I said, I'm working for a tech startup. And we take that for granted nowadays, but entrepreneurship was not something regularly spoken about. So literally, I had to explain what a startup was. Like, how do you define a word with a word? Like, it's a company that's starting up.
Yeah.
Nowadays, everybody wants to work for a startup. And you know, and the definition of what a startup is has broadened. But my secret sauce as a contributor to companies has always been market opportunity strategy. Look there. That's the thing that's causing people pain today and is going to become a big opportunity tomorrow. How do we get to it? So I've done that for startups, large enterprises. And quite frankly, I never thought I'd be a founder myself because I'm a technical person, but I don't write code, right? Like just because I can finger paint doesn't mean I'm an artist. And you know, one day I was sitting working for another cybersecurity company. I said, hold on 1 second. All of these prospects and analysts and customers are talking about building taller walls and deeper moats and getting, you know, fancier sharks with laser beams. Why aren't we focused on where 9 out of 10 breaches begin? And that's the foundation. That's the software. And so, you know, as one of our subsequent investors said to me, Brittany, of course you started your own company. You've been doing that for other companies and you were just waiting for your moment. So that's how I got here.
Okay. And I have more questions about Wobby in a moment, but first official question. Brittany, are you an impatient entrepreneur?
I am very impatient. I think if you're not impatient as an entrepreneur, then you need to reevaluate how you're looking at things. The flip side is, you know, like all things startup, it's a paradox because everything takes, it's one of the first pieces of advice I got, be prepared for everything to take 6 months longer than you plan. and that was before a pandemic. And it really does, right? But you've got to be, it's really being impatient is about that, like, hey, okay, what do I do next better? How do I continuously improve? And I think that's, you know, because nothing's static when you're starting a company, right? And as you know, entrepreneurship can be whether you're starting a company or it can be going and affecting change in another company, right? It doesn't mean, and that's got to be like willing to push on that status quo. And I think that's what impatience really is in this life.
Right. And it's interesting. So we serve a lot of entrepreneurs through our PR and marketing firm. And of course, we are one, and or I am one. And I actually don't love working with startups. And I've said this before on the show, because so much changes in the beginning of a business, and it's supposed to, you know, but that can be difficult when you are trying to provide value and a return on an investment and things like that. You're trying to anchor to, you know, what problem are we solving or whatnot. But so go ahead.
I was going to say, it's so true, right? Things are changing daily, sometimes hourly. But I think one of the key things people need to remember when they are starting a company is you need to take that time to reflect early on and understand the pain you're solving, how you're solving it.
Yep.
Right. And this is not a technology, how you're solving it, but how are you actually resolving this, right? Alleviating pain and what your mission and vision are. And that's going to provide the box in which you operate. And it makes it easier. Everybody got so used to this word pivot, right? Towson and Ross Geller. Yeah.
Pivot.
And,
and
every startup started thinking that was the normal thing to do. That's not capital efficient. That's really not fair to your employees. I've worked at those companies. And so you can recognize that things are going to change all the time, but you have to have a consistent beat, because otherwise it's just, no matter how much energy you put in, and you see this with your clients, it's not controlled energy.
Right.
And if everybody's pushing towards the same beat, even if the tide changes and the winds blow differently, you're at least all taking that energy the same way. And I think it's been become part of the problem of sort of the glamorizations of startups. I got an idea, and then the idea is different tomorrow. Take the time to actually execute properly, and that makes all the difference.
That's such good advice. So how old is your business baby now?
It is, my business baby. Well, the world of startup years, it's, you know, temperamental teenager. Yeah. But usually it's 6 years old.
It's
6 years old, and we founded it in 2018. So that's where we are today, which is great. And, you know, we've weathered it all.
yeah, you have. And who hires y'all? Who are your clients? Who recognizes the need for this security in their app environment?
So anybody, really, you could say, and I don't mean this to be glib, any company nowadays, because every company is a technology company.
It's true.
Very specifically for us, the level of complexity we deal with in cyber, it's like large mid-market to Fortune 500. We've even done some defense work as well. And it's because as you hit a certain scale as an organization, it's not just check the box security. In fact, security should never be check the box.
Yeah.
You have a lot of nuance, and it creates what I call the DevSecOps hairball, right? A lot of people, process, tools, nobody knows the right thing that they're supposed to do at the right time. And we're just like, just tell us what the rules are, and we'll just spoon feed it to somebody, or we'll take care of it. And that's how you get that consistency in anything, right? I'm a big believer there are no new problems, just applications of old problems. And that's really what we're solving for in this sort of data-rich world.
Cool. So sort of a same question asked two different ways. One, what's your vision for the business, you know, as it grows and continues to mature into, you know, beyond its temperamental teenagers? and then if it's not the same thing, what is there something you're specifically impatient about right now?
I'd say two separate things, right? I think I'm always impatient about, you know, the next day when I get to go just make pottery in the backyard.
Yes.
Don't talk to me. I don't have to respond to emails. But no, you know, I think what the goal for me on the business is, you tend to also see, I think, in the startup world a lot, point solutions. And our long-term vision is this is not a new problem, right? This is a problem that people have been hacking away at with a lot of point solutions. For us, I want us to go be the company that solves it the correct way, and becomes just, you know, the same way we talk about Google Sheets or Microsoft Office or, you know, any of those staples for the people that we sell into. Yep. We're going to grow with them. We're going to be there forever. And it's that platform. That helps them tackle this very complex issue. What I'm very impatient about right now is, and if every day I get more and more impatient, is all the talk about female funding.
Yes. That's going to be a question I asked, so let's dive in.
you know, So, you know, for years, people were going, oh my God, it's only 2% of all dollars that go to women. You want to know what it was in Q1? 1.6. Just when we thought we couldn't get any worse, we did. And then you look at industries and technology that have a very low percentage of women, cybersecurity being one of it, where the overall workforce is represented by less than 25% of women. And in any given half of the year, more dollars go into cybersecurity companies than have in the previous 10 years for female-founded cybersecurity companies. And you cannot say that there's not a wealth of talent out there and opportunities. And I quite frankly thought the battle would be easier because I went, it's cybersecurity. You either know it or you don't. Every problem that you hear, whether it's in some of the TEDx talks that I'm sure some of your audience has heard or, you know, just anecdotally, I have encountered, and I'm really, really tired of it. You know, a lot of it's a funnel problem. We've got to get more. It's not just funding the female founders. We actually have to get more women and non-traditional investors investing at the angel stage. Because you're not even seeing some of these startups enter the institutional funnel. So to me, it's there's both sides of it that we can do. And I'm really tired of it being a talking point.
Yeah. It's like, I don't want it to just be a news item. I want, or I don't want it to be a news item anymore. I want this to not be an issue. Like, I want to be able to go to my next seed round and close it.
And just for, there's so many, I see other female entrepreneurs across different industries out there. And you see, and like, we openly have these conversations and it, we shouldn't be having, this is not a newly discovered issue.
Right.
And I think that's what I'm getting so impatient about, not just for me. How do we, how can you, I've said this before, I wouldn't wish, if I had a daughter, I wouldn't wish this upon her. You know, I'd never tell somebody not to go do it, but it's very hard for it sometimes. And that's where I get impatient because I want to go, and this is a journey. This is an opportunity. There's a lot of great ideas out there. And why would we eliminate half of the population from pursuing that path?
Right. So
discourage, I should say.
Right. Cut him off. They're not being actively encouraged, for sure.
Correct.
So in cybersecurity, you said there's just the population is very much underrepresented. But then at a leadership level, I'm assuming it's even...
I want to say it's like 10%. So our major conference, annual major conference, is coming up in May. So I'll report back after then. But last year, you know, there's sort of an executive-only day beforehand. And I will tell you, out of a room of 300 people with 8 to 10 top, you know, rounds, we weren't even hitting one woman per round.
Okay.
And these are supposed to be the top leaders. So that sort of marries with the stats, and for sure, right? I saw it in my own career in tech more broadly as well, that as you started to climb the ranks, you know, people talk about the broken rung. And you have more than half of the female workforce in technology leave by 35.
Wow.
And yeah, which is really, which you then pair that with the fact that we actually have a lot of the tech workforce retiring in the upcoming years. So this becomes a massive economic issue for everybody. Because again, lots of talented people that aren't choosing tech, or even worse, opting out. So here, technology companies have put resources in, yet they feel that they can no longer be successful in a tech environment. And I've had friends that have gone, I've had friends that have gone through that soul searching moment of, will I stay in technology?
Well, that's a bummer.
Where's that light and peppy conversation?
As you think about the future, so are you doing something for the lower rungs of the ladder to encourage pipeline? And then are you also thinking ahead to your future for when you can be a funder for others?
100%. So I'll separate those things out. You know, one, you know, obviously, whatever you can do to be active in your community, we try to engage, you know, with local middle school students, by the way, real appreciation for the teachers, and a day with them during the day in the life. So, you know, so there's doing that. But then there's also how, for those that are actively in the workforce today, how we actually recruit. Mm-hmm. So maybe you've seen this stat before, but what percentage of a job description do you think men feel they meet to apply for it versus women?
Yeah. Oh, gosh. I'm going to get it wrong. I have seen this. What is it, like 10% for men or something like that?
So funny enough, that's what everybody says. The official stat is 60%.
Okay.
but typically guys respond when I pose it to them, mm-hmm. between 20 and 40 or something. Mm-hmm. But the official stat is 60%. Mm-hmm. For women, it's 100%.
Yeah.
And so the number one thing, and women tend to be used as a proxy for underrepresented groups as well. Mm-hmm. And the number one thing you can change are your hiring practices. Mm-hmm. And something when I started Wobbe, I said, we've got to do is not write a job description that says you have 3 to 5 years mm-hmm. of customer success experience and blah, blah, blah. That has no bearing on whether or not you'll be successful. I went through that myself, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, I can't apply for this job. Yeah. I have 10 years X. Mm-hmm. And they're like, yeah, but you have the depth of experience.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Transferable skills.
Right. And so talking about transferable skills, do I want somebody that has 3 to 5 years of customer success experience? No, I want somebody that's good at managing expectation, mm-hmm. can be calm under pressure. You want to know who that might be? A mother that's re-entering the workforce.
Yes.
Right? You know, and mm-hmm. and also I talked about the glamorization of startups. On a lot of startups, job description. Be a ninja.
Yeah.
You know, I don't identify with being a ninja. And, mm-hmm. you know, and so one of the things I did starting Wobbe, say we've got to write for outcomes, yep. right? There are certainly some jobs that you have to have some certain technical stuff, right? Especially mm-hmm. with development or whatnot. Sure. But write for outcomes because, you know, when you're hiring, everybody looks for three things, willing, able, and experienced, but you can only get two. And you want to know what? Willing and able always makes up for a lack of experience.
100%.
That's what I want. And I think that's the number one thing we can do today, mm-hmm. all of us, is relook at our job descriptions. Yeah. You know, and then for the future, I think it is, you know, I've seen a couple of other female founders that have flipped, you know, gone to the other side. Mm-hmm. I do think about it. And I think about angel investing and really reaching out and trying to, you know, it goes both ways. And I've gotten involved in networks. And I think it's depth of network. One day, when I flip that switch, knock on wood, it's going to be on me to go and do that research and not just wait. And I think what happens is that a lot of the angels nowadays, they wait for things to be delivered to them because they have a certain amount of cachet and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But one of the things we've actually done as a company to get more diverse investors or first-time investors, mm-hmm. Is lower our check size. Mm-hmm. Because mm-hmm. first-time investors, you say, $50,000 check size. And you're like, what? Most women haven't even been asked, right?
Yeah.
And so you look, it's $5,000 so I can start investing. So mm-hmm. I'm trying to, that's been a little bit more of my mission this year is how can I as a founder enable more investors to enter? And then I'll start working on the other side of it one day.
I love that. You know, it's like you're making a financial tool have less barriers to entry, exactly. Also. So that's really exciting.
It's a great part of a diverse, you know, I think it's a really interesting time for women in investment and money, right? There's a lot of conversation mm-hmm. about
yes.
it. Mm-hmm. And we forget when our mothers grew up, they couldn't get a credit card mm-hmm. or own a house without a man's signature. Like mm-hmm. we forget that there's actually a lot of education that probably wasn't imparted to us.
Right.
You know, I was lucky that it was very much dinner table conversation for mm-hmm. me. Mm-hmm. On the whole, I don't think, you know, everybody gets that.
No.
And so, right, we're sort of, I'm glad to hear this conversation. And I think we need to empower more women to feel more comfortable mm-hmm. with making some of these alternative investments.
Love that. And then on the recruitment side of it, again, I wanted to circle back to that for a moment. That's something that's on my heart and mind too, as, you know, looking beyond my echo chamber a little bit so that as our company grows, I'm looking beyond my network. Are y'all doing anything interesting, not only with the job description, but the channels that you're using to find people?
Yeah, so one of the things that we've actually really leaned into is more fractional talent. Mm-hmm. One, it helps with diversity because you tend to actually find, you know, I'll keep harping on women just because I'm a sure. woman, right? So it's my reference. You tend to find more that may not be able to do a full-time job, mm-hmm. But man, our head of ops is a military wife. And so she's not in the traditional channels because she has to move very frequently. Yep. And I sourced her through a company. I think the founder actually just got recognized on the Inc. Female Founders list.
Love it.
That specializes in placing military spouses because they're unique constraints. And that's one way, right? That's, and, you know, I live in Boston and I love Boston. I'm on the Massachusetts Technology Leadership Council. Like, I believe in our ecosystem here, but not all the best talent in the world is here. And so one of the things is that we've done where sometimes we'll sort of like hop, skip, you know, our networks to say, oh, you're in Denver. Right. Great. Get us connected into your network there. And that's one of the other ways that we look for different types of talent in different pools, and get out of our network. I'm also a believer in the mafia rule. You come in, and different than like individual contributor employees making referrals, but like if you come in a more management position, you can have two, maybe three people that you say, I'd really like to have in this company.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
That way you don't end up with like a carbon copy of the last company that person is with. And and just naturally it creates diversity.
I like that. Because, you know, birds of a feather flock together, which can, it can be a really great thing, particularly if you have this avatar in mind. But at the same time, companies are so much stronger when we have diverse thought, diverse background, you know, just all these different factors that contribute to a really strong business.
Right. And that's, you said exactly what I was just about to say, which diversity isn't a picture. Diversity is about diverse thought, background, experience, whatnot. So we also think about diversity, not just in the, you know, DEI metrics that we have to report. We have engineers from early 20s to 60s, right? Those are different life experiences. And a great story was, you know, in one of our engineering teams, they were talking about implementing something. And the person that had been doing this for a couple of decades said, that is a nice concept, but the practicality of maintaining that code. And for anybody who knows that, right, there's a trade-off all the time. The coolest technology is not always the most practical to implement. And, you know, and that's what we moved forward on. And it was that perspective. And he understands the customers and all that stuff. So it's nice. It's that diversity of experiences. It's that, you know, I look for on resumes, did somebody, not everybody has the opportunity to study abroad, but did somebody take the chance to go do something different that wasn't just a linear track through college, right? That's the kind of thing. That's how I think you start to really cultivate a diverse culture. And then people want to come be part of it because they get to be them, right? They get to show up with their best selves at work, which is an unfiltered version.
Beautiful. So, and how many team members do you have right now?
We have about 20.
And y'all are, you're it's a virtual business, correct?
So it's virtual. We, I will say one of the things that we're starting to move back towards is having more of a locus in Boston, but we are distributed, right? Again, and not all the best talent is in Boston, but you know, one of the things I think people missed through COVID is the, hey, what do you think about this? Can you just look at my screen sort of thing? So we make a real effort, like our whole team will be together in May for a week. You know, and you know, some of it's more formal stuff. Some of it's, hey, everybody's just in an office together so they can collaborate together.
Sure. Cool. Well, okay. So Brittany, as you work on yourself, as you become the leader you're meant to be, are there books you attribute to your success? Do you like to read? Do you like to listen to podcasts? Do you go to conferences? You mentioned going to conferences. Like, how do you enrich yourself?
Yeah. So I'd say the biggest way I actually enrich myself is by doing non-work things.
Yes.
You know, I think it's the myth of an entrepreneur. Oh, you must be working 24/7. And if you don't take care of yourself, you can't be your best self for work. So sometimes it's reading books. I just read, and sometimes they could be fiction, sometimes they could be biographies. I just, for the WWE fans, I just read Becky Lynch's The Man. If you asked me a year ago if I'd be into WWE reading her story, but I love it. I bring it up because she tells a story about becoming a wrestler, and it was really just the entrepreneur's journey. And it was really, really great. So I try to do random things. I ask people for book recommendations and whatnot. I love to cook and still have time with my friends and take my dog for walks. Podcasts, I'm a golfer. So okay. I love listening to First Cut.
Yeah.
It keeps me up to date, you know, and it's just, it's again, it's getting out of the zone so I can be better when I'm in the zone. That's sort of the stuff I do. And it took, listen to me, I learned the hard you know, but sometimes it's a bubble bath on a Sunday night, right?
Right,
like,
right.
Those little things, and you're like, you got to take care of yourself because otherwise you can't be there for the business.
One, I read a book a few years ago called Free to Focus by Michael Hyatt. Have you read that?
No, I haven't.
It's really good. It's a great primer in delegation, like different types of delegation, but it's also really about managing your time and energy and the permission to have that offstage time that, you know, at some point it's a law of diminishing returns. And if you keep Correct. Trying to punch through, it's just going to get worse.
It's 100%. And that is, yes, 100%. And what people don't understand about the entrepreneur's journey on top of it is that you get, it's a journey where you're told no 99% of the time. And so if you let yourself only hang out in that cycle of being told no 99% of the time, it's going to eat away at you, right? So you need to go still do those things that they've done some research on, where you create the positive feedback loops, where you get those endorphin rushes. You remember that you are actually a good person and you can do good things.
Yes.
And so to balance that out, because, you know, I think especially those that are entrepreneurial in nature, we tend to be overachievers, and I often say entrepreneurship is the only place where overachievers come to fail 99% of the time. We're also masochistic.
Yes, a little bit. High achieving or masochist.
There's a special profile.
Are you in the process of creating anything like that right now, like new service lines or anything like that?
So in this vein, and so we're always creating new service lines and whatnot. In this vein, I actually have I am not an influencer. Let's be very clear about this. But I do have a separate Instagram account that allows me to channel some of my creativity. Uh-huh. It also allows me to stay up to date on technology. Like I wouldn't have an excuse to use Canva, but I think it's one of the best inventions.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
I brought it to my team, right? Mm-hmm. So I do have a golf fashion for women because it's very hard to find
good it is. Golf yes.
for women. Instagram account, and that's my like once a week I sit down and do it, and you know I have to go learn something new because that is not my realm, and and I play around with it, and you know it's sort of nice. I stay on top of other kinds of technologies and what's going on, and you know AI and all that sort of stuff. So that's my pet project on the side that gets the energy going in a different way. So that way I can then come back and like we just did a big series on called Perspectives. So I learned some stuff in Canva on that and how we could animate stuff. And I was like, great team, let me co-teach you on it. And then you can go do this better than I can. Do cool videos with it and all sorts of other stuff. Mm-hmm. But it's like, if I could do it, you can do it.
Yes. I have a couple of responses to that. But first, what's the handle of that account?
It is ForFemme, ForFemme.
Nice. So we didn't cover this when we met the other day, but I was a competitive golfer in high school and college.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. And you're right. Yeah. Fashion is, it's come a long way.
It's come a long way. What I find is the issue is finding the pieces, right? And there's so many, there's actually a lot of women. One of the PGA Tour wives, I'm sure there's probably a couple of them that have done it, just launched a new one. And it goes to show you, right? There's a massive market demand.
Yeah.
And nobody was filling this gap. Like, I remember golfing and you're like, these Bermuda shorts? What?
Pleated khakis.
Oh, sexy.
But I love the idea of challenging yourself in that way. I remember one time I was listening to this educator talk about the reason they do ropes courses for young people. And that's because when you are in a situation that is new and you're not in control of it, like that's when you open up new pathways in your brain and can actually learn something. And so, I started taking tennis lessons like 2 or 3 years ago now. And it was just like this period of time of struggling and sucking at something. And I loved it because I was just like, I'm horrible, but I'm learning.
Correct. Right. You almost become, and it's totally true. It opens up new pathways. Mm-hmm. And it, again, you know, entrepreneurs, high achievers, there become fewer and fewer challenges. Mm-hmm. And it's not necessarily a lack of desire to pursue them. It becomes time, right? Yep. You know, it's a time management thing. So if you can find one thing that just, it's simple enough, you see it perpetuate in the work. And it's not just coming up with ideas. You have to find those ways to energize yourself. And for me, and like, sounds like for you too, I like to challenge myself.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, and two, our generation, or particularly, I'm a couple years older than you, but like, I had technology in the home early just because my mom worked for IBM. So I had a computer before a lot of people, but so I guess we're like the adopter generation, but whereas my kids are the native generation or something like that.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, like I remember seeing like my grandmother struggle with a cordless phone at one point. Right. I was like, you can step away from the headset, the handset. you're not attached to it. And I just thought that was so silly. But now I see myself like resisting technology sometimes. And I'm like, no, like, you know, at one point I taught myself TikTok just because I didn't want this huge thing to pass me by. And I didn't want to resist it because I was scared of it or I was feeling like, I don't know how to do that.
But funny enough, TikToks, I'm like, I just draw the line at TikTok. It's not a security thing. It's just my, but exactly. I literally said this yesterday. I said, I don't want to be the person that's like, what's a Siri?
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Hey, you know, and I think some of it, you know, probably I grew up in a tech family too. So I'm literally on one of the original IBM laptops with my dad.
Yeah.
And when I was a baby. And so I don't want to. And it's so tough. You have to prioritize staying on top of these things, right? Your grandmother didn't one day go, I'm uncomfortable using a wireless phone because she was uncomfortable because she resisted it. It was
just you buy
a phone, right? It just happened. And you know, I think, again, it goes to the entrepreneurial journey that you have to go make time to be present in the present. Because otherwise, you're never going to get to the future for a variety of reasons. And that's the myth of entrepreneurship, that you can only be doing this one thing.
Yeah, love it. Okay, so let's step into our vulnerability corner for a moment. What is something that has happened in your business life that when it happened, you felt like, oh my God, I do not know if we're going to recover from this. You know, the rug gets totally pulled out from underneath you. But now looking back at it, you realize it was one of the best things that could have happened to you.
Yeah. We went through a period where, you know, everything was great.
Mm-hmm.
And there were all the little signs there that we had the wrong people.
Mm.
And it hit really fast. And had to have the tough conversation with the board, had to stand up for some of the decisions, right? And at that time, I mean, I remember literally having to sleep at my dad's house, right? Like it just all hit me. And I was talking to my best friend who's also in tech and she's in VC. She said, you know, you said this to me like 2 months ago, in different terms, but you know, one person had gotten snippy when I was asking just for the person to do their job and you know, these little things. We've all lived through it.
Yeah.
And I think what it got me through was, one, I can be resilient and I can f-ing do this. Two, I think it's also that memory to trust your gut, right? By now, I think a lot of people know our guts actually have their own brain, right? There's that sixth sense. And the pieces were all there. And this is why I also, you know, I think it's a nice pairing to our last conversation. Why you have to get out of the business a little bit. Because if you don't give yourself some space, you can't process the problems. And because you're just in it and you start getting into survivalist mode, which again, not good for anybody.
No.
So I think it allowed us to learn some lessons. And I go, the easy answer would have obviously been the pandemic, but same mm-hmm. lesson there, right? Mm-hmm. You're resilient. And if you build it right from the beginning, you will be able to persist. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and even what you were saying, and you can make the changes, good, healthy changes versus just frivolous changes mm-hmm. Because you've thought about it, you've thought it out. And I think that was that sort of watershed moment for me where I was going, oh my God, like, what does tomorrow look like? And it was the first time I literally couldn't see what tomorrow was going to look like. Wow. Cause, you know, and you had to go fight. We had to fight to keep our employees and, you know, make the tough decisions and, you know, I'll bank on them not listening to this. Right? Some people wanted to give them a 75% paid cut. And I said, here's the math, just don't pay me. Right. And because they're more important, right? This is how you, and when you make those, you know, you call it the baby and you're like, yeah, this is my baby. And you don't want to suffer from winner's curse, but you got to be willing to put it all on the line. And I'm sure you've heard the story about the chicken and the pig opening up the breakfast joint. Oh.
Which one's committed and exactly. Hey, who's committed?
You gotta be committed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So when you talk about trusting your intuition, are you alluding to, like, you sensed something and you didn't make a corrective action, or you did?
Correct. And by the way, I'm still guilty. Nobody ever says, wow, I wish I'd waited longer to fire that person.
Oh God, yeah, never.
Or to make that corrective action mm-hmm, or whatnot. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And, you know, and I think that's the bigger thing. You know, we're going through it right now and still, and I have to just, my dad actually gave me this advice. You can only fire somebody once.
Yeah.
So just move on. You fire them, move on. And mm-hmm. you're like, yeah, but then something comes up randomly 4 months and it's like, let me take that salt in that almost closed
yes.
door. Yeah. And I think that's really, really what it was, right? It was just, unfortunately, a bad storm all at the same time.
Sure.
And I didn't, and I think the other thing is also, you've got to listen to your own intuition, but you've got to surround yourself with the right people.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the people that have been giving me advice were not doing it in the best interest. And so I actually firmly believe in, like, having your own personal board of advisors.
Yes.
There are people that would I love to work with, yes, but I actually like creating a little space
mm-hmm.
to the company and them. So that way I can go to them and say, here's what's going on. Am I crazy?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Am I crazy? What do I do next? Right. And their best interest isn't my interest. So I think it's a combination of things.
Right.
You understand why second time founders are super successful.
Yeah.
These are the things you can learn on the job. You can sit, you know, my business school has a class in starting a startup. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, you can't learn. You know this. You can't learn how to start a company sitting in a classroom,
no.
especially when you're in school, because it's already a safe bubble.
Mm-hmm,
right.
Mm-hmm.
We're making the tough choices of, I have a mortgage payment, right?
Mm-hmm,
like
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
you've got kids, like those are tough choices. And that's why I say you got to be committed
yep.
and you be willing to trust your instincts.
Yeah. And, you know, speaking of being a woman in business or in technology specifically, but trusting our instincts has been coached out of us in a lot of ways. You know, the inputs that we receive growing up is, teaches us to not trust ourselves. And so, you know, I'm 43 now and I'm just now able to really listen to myself so much better than I ever have before, which, you know, annoys me, but, but, you know, better late than never, right? with someone, a colleague of mine once shared that, your anxiety will yell at you. Your intuition will speak in a calm voice.
Yeah.
And that has been really helpful because a lot of times I'll be in a situation and it's just like, you know, loud clanging noises in my head, like, get out, get out, get out, you know, and you're like, oh, is that intuition? But your intuition is the soft voice that speaks to you. I actually had I'm going to tell a story for a moment. I was really wanting to fill a role in the business recently, and I was around someone and I was like, oh, is this the person? But it was really my anxiety, like, offer the job right now, offer it. And I was like, no. I mean, I thought about some of my mentors all saying, that's a bad idea. Please don't do that.
Exactly.
So I mean,
no, that is fantastic. I'm stealing that because it's totally true.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
If you think about anybody yelling at you,
mm-hmm.
You become paralyzed in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And versus, hey, let's have a conversation about this. And, you know, you were asking about that. Yelling at me, you're just like, I can't process that. It's it's kind of like modern communication tools. I can't receive that much information if somebody's yelling at me. So I'll remember that next time I start
yelling at me. Well, so yes, the yelling happened. And then a few days later, a quiet voice whispered a different name. Yeah. And that is who is here with us today. And I was like, okay, you know, I just needed to chill out.
Right, you need to take that space. I actually talk about this in the context of cybersecurity all the time, right? We get all inundated with spam emails, fraud, all that stuff. And I know a number of people, including in the cyber industry, that have gotten those calls that are like, oh, your son broke his jaw and he's in jail, right? Hey, but even the random text messages, like you have a USPS package.
Yes, yes. Oh my God.
They're relying on catching you in that adrenaline moment. And nobody makes good decisions in a moment of adrenaline, right? You can use, if you learn how to control that adrenaline, that's really awesome. But but do not rely on it for decision making.
Right. Take me. Right. Deep breath. Okay, so back to when Brittany was a little girl, was there a part of you that your parents or your peers or your teachers were like, oh my God, Brittany, you're so impatient, you're so emotional, you're so competitive, or something like that, where you were made to feel like that part of you was deficient. But now as a founder and a leader, you realize that that's actually your superpower.
Yeah, I'd say... oh, this is really easy. Hey, I talk about how my superpower, my secret sauce as a worker or just a person is saying, there's something interesting sitting over in that corner. And for anybody that remembers geometry, I hated proofs because you had to do step A, step B, step C. And actually when I was doing algebra in middle school, I would get all the answers right and I'd be marked down because I didn't show my work. And right, so it creates a certain insecurity. So like, I'm very good at math. Want to know what I do now? Double check my calculations on a calculator. But right, but it's that like, I know there's something there and I can see the path towards it, but just because I can't explain it to you doesn't mean it doesn't exist.
Right. Yeah.
100%. And you know, some of that's a communication skill, but that was definitely one of the things. It was like, oh, there's Brittany's going off the beaten path again. You know what? More people should go off the beaten path. Might learn something. And, you know, we talk about at the company, psychological safety. And you know, something we do with our team is, and when I say a hackathon, I don't just mean the engineering team, everybody, like when we get together in May, we'll do a company-wide hackathon on just things people want to work on. And so that's one way that you can encourage people to go do something different. But I'm actually a big believer of just sending your teammates out, right? So I was talking with a candidate and he said, how do you do it? I said, people have to own what they're doing and know that we're here for support when it goes wrong. Right. And so we'll do what I call win-loss reports or case studies. You can't tell me about a success without telling me about the thing that went wrong, because we know it didn't just happen. And if it did just happen, it just happened. Right. So you can't help us that. But it was definitely that sort of thing. Like, you've got to think this way, very linear. And I get the discipline of it when you are however old you are, 12 and stuff, but at the same time, to not just let me go off and into the distance and come up back with the answer out of the woods.
Right.
You know, I think that's the thing that stuck with me the most, for sure.
Or to intuit the answer.
Right, to intuit the answer, exactly.
I have a 9-year-old daughter, and math time at homework time is not my favorite hour of the day, because a lot of it is me having to say, you have to show your work, and her looking at me like I have 12 heads, and I just asked her to walk over hot coals. She's like, I already wrote the answer. I don't want to show you how I got there.
Exactly. I wrote the answer. I know. They spend all this time making sure we memorize our multiplication tables, and then we go to use that same intuition because we've learned it and we've trained our brain to do it. And then it's like, nope, excuse me. I need you to write a 14-page proof of how you got here. You're like, somebody else proved this. This is not my job. My job is to actually apply it. It drove me nuts. For anybody that's ever had to calculate space under a curve.
I blocked a lot of it out.
it's not a practical skill until you get to business school and, you know, talking about distribution curves. And they're like, we're going to tell you how to do this the cheating way. And you're like, are you kidding me? It's been years to having to do manual calculation. And you've just given me a 2-second trick on how to do it. And they're like, yeah, because you're best. You'd be a mathematician. You wouldn't be in business school.
Kidding. You've known how to do this this whole time.
Like, I didn't have to do calculus. Are you kidding me?
Woof. Oh, man. So much. Yeah. So many repressed memories here. Okay.
Let me go crawl under my desk. Right now. Sorry.
All right. So as we get close to wrapping up here, what is one piece of advice you could give our listeners to make their lives stronger or better?
So I love that you call it vulnerability corner. It's not being, and having this honest conversation. Mm-hmm. It's that don't be afraid to be vulnerable. Mm-hmm. It takes a village. Mm-hmm. Most people are not going to understand what it's like, right? Mm-hmm. To be doing this, mm-hmm. but it doesn't mean that they're not there for you. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's just being that sounding board. Sometimes they can introduce you to somebody, right? They're not expecting anything in return because somebody else has done that for them. Mm-hmm. And that was the number one piece of advice somebody gave me when I founded the company. Mm-hmm. And two people gave it to me within a couple of months. And the first one was a guy I respect immensely, and he'd been a CEO and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And I was like, be vulnerable. And I had that negative, very feminine connotation of it. And I was like,
yeah.
Right. I was actually like pissed off at him. Mm-hmm, and the woman that's been a CEO said the same thing to me. And, you know, fast forward 9 months as I'm burning out by myself because I must be, just because I can doesn't mean I should do it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's right. Like, I get it. It's not about, you know, crying about everything. By the way, cry. Feel free to cry. Yes. There's a lot of blood, sweat, and tears is real. It's not about that. It's about saying, I need somebody to help me do this. Mm-hmm. And I still struggle with it, right? Again, the conflict of the entrepreneurial spirit. But that's, I think, the number one thing, because you're going to solve it better together than you are alone, right? Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Love that. Great advice. Amen. Okay. Where can people find you?
Best way to reach out to me is on LinkedIn. If you reach out to me, hey, Brittany Greenfield, just let me know. You've heard me on The Impatient Entrepreneur, so I have some context, and I'm happy to continue any conversation there. Let me know, like I just said, if there's anything I can do to help you in your entrepreneurial or work or whatever journey, or you want to talk about golf. happy to have the conversation, because I've been the beneficiary of so many great people that have done the same thing for me. Just please make sure I know why you're reaching out to me.
Great advice. Well, Brittany, you are a gem. I'm so glad we have crossed paths and you're here today. Thank you for an amazing conversation.
We're going to have to go golfing.
Yes.
But I know. I'm going to be embarrassed in front of you. I never said I was a good golfer. I just said I like golfing. Well,
heard. It's been a minute since, you know, children and golf are not like the best bedfellows. Nope. soon we'll all be out there together. All right. Well, thank you so much.
Thanks, Lauren.
Thanks for listening to The Impatient Entrepreneur. Love the podcast? Be sure to share it with a friend or colleague and give us a 5-star review. You can also chat with us on Instagram or Facebook at The Impatient Entrepreneur Pod. Want to star on a future episode? Head over to theimpatiententrepreneurpod.com to inquire. Thank you to the team at Quidar & Co. for believing in me and bringing this podcast to life. And thank you to Carson Childers for mixing and editing this episode. I can't wait to see you next time.